As we continue our study in the book of Genesis, we're now still in the 18th chapter of Genesis. And this chapter tells us about the angels and the Lord that appeared to Abraham, and how Abraham and Sarah entertained them. They fed them under the tree, and they were coming to renew the promise and verify the fact that Sarah would have a child by Abraham. And so we'd like to begin reading now out of chapter 18 with verse 9 and go through verse 15. And they said unto him, Where is Sarah thy wife? And he said, Behold, in the tent. And he said, I will certainly return unto thee according to the time of life, and lo, Sarah thy wife shall have a son. And Sarah heard it in the tent door, which was behind him. Now Abraham and Sarah were old and well stricken in age, and had ceased to be with Sarah after the manner of women. Therefore Sarah laughed within herself, saying, After I am waxed old, shall I have pleasure, my Lord being old also? And the Lord said unto Abraham, Wherefore did Sarah laugh, saying, Shall I of a surety bear a child which am old? Is there anything too hard for the Lord? At the time appointed I will return unto thee, according to the time of life, and Sarah shall have a son. Then Sarah denied, saying, I laugh not, for she was afraid. And he said, Nay, but thou didst laugh. So in this 9th verse, the angel is asking, Where is Sarah thy wife? And behold, in the tent, answers Abraham. It is likely that the custom of the day was for women to not sit at meat with strange men. So Sarah was in the tent. Where else should she be? There she is in her place, yet within the sound of the voice. The daughters of Sarah will learn from her to be chaste and keepers at home, Titus 2 and 5. Being in our place and doing our duty will not cause us to miss the promises of God. Very much of this hospitality to these angels was provided by Sarah, though she remained behind the scenes. The promise that she should have a son is renewed. In verse 10, And he said, I will certainly return unto thee according to the time of life, and lo, Sarah thy wife shall have a son. And Sarah heard it in the tent door which was behind him. I will return unto thee and give the fulfillment of the promise, as I now give the promise. Sarah thy wife shall have a son. This is repeated in verse 14. In the same manner, the promise of Messiah was often repeated in the Old Testament. In order to strengthen God's people, God repeats his promises to his people. Isaiah 28:10, For precept must be on precept, precept upon precept, line upon line, line upon line, here a little and there a little. God's promises will be carried out. Romans 9:9, For this is the word of promise. At this time will I come, and Sarah shall have a son. The spiritual seed of Abraham owe their life, hope, joy, and all to this promise. Galatians 4:29, And if ye be Christ, then are ye Abraham's seed and heirs according to the promise. Sarah thinks this news is too good to be true. Verses 11 and 12, Now Abraham and Sarah were old and well stricken in age, and had ceased to be with Sarah after the manner of women. Therefore Sarah laughed within herself, saying, After I am waxed old, shall I have pleasure, my Lord being old also? Her laugh was not a laugh of joy like Abraham's in 17:17, but it was a laugh of doubt and possibly scorn. We see here that the same act in one person may have an entirely different motive when done by another person. The great objection of Sarah was her age. I am waxed old. She had been barren all of her life, and now she was past the age for childbearing. And to make matters worse, Abraham had the same problem. My Lord is also old. But let us take careful note of the fact that Sarah calls Abraham her Lord. As she comments on the promise, this is the only good thing she said. The Holy Spirit takes note of what she said and gives her honor for it, and recommends it to all Christian wives. In 1 Peter 3 and 6, the NIV version says, Like Sarah who obeyed Abraham and called him her master, you are her daughters if you do what is right and do not give way to fear. 1 Peter 3 and 6 in the King James version reads like this, Even as Sarah obeyed Abraham, calling him Lord, whose daughters you are, as long as you do well and are not afraid with any amazement. Sarah called Abraham Lord out of respect and subjection, and so today must the wife in like manner reverence her husband. Ephesians 5:33, Nevertheless, let every one of you in particular so love his wife, even as himself, and the wife see that she reverenced her husband. And so we would like to notice what Sarah said that was good and appropriate, while we are forced to also notice that the good was mixed with that which showed her weakness. Human situations often seem to contradict divine promises. If one is guided by physical senses only, the weak faith of a believer may falter. It is hard to hold to the spiritual when the physical senses object. Sarah's objection was very logical, but not according to the true faith. And Sarah's faith would overcome her fleshly logic. Hebrews 11:11 says, "Through faith also Sarah received strength to conceive seed, and was delivered of a child when she was past age, because she judged him faithful who had promised." Sarah would eventually believe the promise and receive the strength needed to carry out her role in it, which was absolutely necessary for it to come about. So Sarah must first be reproved for her doubt. Verses 13, 14, and 15, "And the Lord said unto Abraham, Wherefore did Sarah laugh, saying, Shall I of a surety bear a child which am old? Is anything too hard for the Lord? At the time appointed I will return unto thee, according to the times of life, and Sarah shall have a son. Then Sarah denied, saying, I laugh not, for she was afraid. And he said, Nay, but thou didst laugh." Although Sarah was very kindly and generously entertaining these angels, yet when she showed her lack of faith, they did scold her for it, as Christ did Martha in her own house in Luke 10:40-41. If our friends are kind to us, we must not be so unkind to them as to encourage them in sin. God gave this criticism to Sarah by Abraham, her husband. To him, he said, "Why did Sarah laugh?" Maybe Abraham had not fully informed Sarah of the full details of the promise, and had she known all of its ramifications, she would not have been surprised, or Abraham might have been told of Sarah's laughing so he could tell her of it. In this way, they may have shared in the rebuke. But the rebuke itself was very plain: wherefore did Sarah laugh? We should inquire about our laughter, as to whether we are making a fool of ourselves by laughing. Ecclesiastes 7:5-6, "It is better to hear the rebuke of the wise than for a man to hear the song of fools. For as the crackling of thorns under a pot, so is the laughter of the fool. This also is vanity." We must realize that our unbelief and distrust are a great offense to God. The question was a good one: why did Sarah laugh? But another question is asked, which should silence forever the objections made by our fleshly nature: is anything too hard for the Lord? Nothing is so secret that he doesn't notice, such as Sarah's laughing. Nothing so difficult that he cannot do it, such as the giving of a child to Sarah in her old age. Sarah foolishly attempts to conceal her fault. Verse 15, she denied, saying, "I did not laugh." She told this lie because she was afraid, but it was foolish for her to attempt to conceal it from an all-seeing eye. She was told, to her shame, "Thou didst laugh." After hearing the angel's response to her laughter, that nothing is too hard for the Lord, Sarah seemed to have quickly realized that her distrust was an error. Now she suddenly realized that it really was a divine promise given to her that she would bear a son. But there was a sinful attempt to cover the sin of disbelief with a lie. It is a shame to do a wrong, but a greater shame to deny doing the wrong when asked about it. This is simply adding more iniquity to our sin. Fear of rebuke may cause us to be snared by telling a lie to conceal the sin, but we deceive ourselves if we think we can toy with God like this. He can and will bring truth into the open and to our shame. Proverbs 28:13, "He that covereth his sins shall not prosper, but whoso confesseth and forsaketh them shall have mercy." Now we'd like to read verses 16 through 22 of this 18th chapter of Genesis. "And the men rose up from thence and looked toward Sodom, and Abraham went with them to bring them on the way. And the Lord said, Shall I hide from Abraham that thing which I do? Seeing that Abraham shall surely become a great and mighty nation, and all the nations of the earth shall be blessed in him. For I know him, And he will command his children and his household after him, and they shall keep the way of the Lord to do justice and judgment, that the Lord may bring upon Abraham that which he has spoken of him. And the Lord said, because the cry of Sodom and Gomorrah is great, and because their sin is very grievous, I will go down now and see whether they have done altogether according to the cry of it, which is come unto me, and if not, I will know. And the men turned their faces from thence and went toward Sodom, but Abraham stood yet before the Lord. The messengers from heaven had two duties to perform on their mission. The first duty was to again announce and reassure Abraham and Sarah that they would soon have the promised son. But the second part of their mission was work of a much different nature. Sodom is to be destroyed, and they must do it. Genesis 19:13, the Lord has sent us to destroy it. We observe here that as with the Lord there is mercy, so as with the same Lord there is vengeance. Each is given to those who deserve it. As the heavenly beings set about the second part of their mission, verse 16 says they looked towards Sodom. They directed their faces against it in wrath. Though God is long-suffering, and he may seem to disregard sinners, causing them to believe that God does not see, yet when the day of his wrath comes, he will look toward them. Verse 22, they went toward Sodom. And accordingly, we will find two of them at Sodom in chapter 19, verse 1. But Abraham went with them to bring them on the way. Abraham wanted to show them utmost respect, and he seemed reluctant to part from such good company. It is always good to associate with those that are good. Now the Lord gives more honor to Abraham. God honors those who honor God. God here takes Abraham into his confidence. He tells Abraham that he plans to destroy Sodom, and he has a conference with Abraham about it. Abraham here seems to have more intimate association with God than ever before. The Lord has some good things to say about Abraham. Verses 17 through 19, and the Lord said, shall I hide from Abraham that thing which I do, seeing that Abraham shall surely become a great and mighty nation, and all the nations of the earth shall be blessed of him? For I know him, that he will command his children and his household after him, and they shall keep the way of the Lord to do justice and judgment, that the Lord may bring upon Abraham that which he hath spoken of him. Here we have the Lord stating that he will reveal to Abraham his purpose concerning Sodom and the reasons he will so confide in Abraham. If Abraham had not brought them on their way, he might not have received this favor. Proverbs 13:20 says, he that walketh with wise men shall be wise, but a companion of fools shall be destroyed. See how God reasons. Shall I hide from Abraham that thing which I do? Why did God decide to confide in Abraham? First of all, Abraham was a very important element in God's plan. His family would surely become a great and mighty nation. And through the Messiah, all the nations of the earth would be blessed of him. Imagine all the nations of the earth. What a high mission for anyone. God considered this mission as grounds to take Abraham into his confidence about the matter of Sodom. But the second reason was that Abraham would teach his family. Verse 19, for I know him that he will command his children and household after him. This was a very important part of Abraham's character and example. Abraham would not only pray with his family, but he taught them as a man of knowledge. He even commanded them as a man of authority and was prophet, king, as well as priest in his own house. To have family blessings, we must properly attend to our family duty. Not only was the covenant made with Abraham and his household, not only was circumcision observed by all of the household, but Abraham was very careful to teach and rule them well. If our children be the Lord's, they must be trained in the Lord's way. But Abraham not only took care of his children, but of his household. His servants were trained in the way of the Lord. The poorest of servants have precious souls that must be looked after. Abraham taught them the deeper things about God, not some frivolous, light, worldly-oriented philosophy with no substance. He taught them to keep the way of the Lord and to do, according to verse 19, justice and judgment. They were to be serious and devout in their service to God and to be fair in their dealings with all men. Justice is the basic standard of what is right. the ability to tell the right from the wrong. All humans should have this sense of justice, to know what is right and what is wrong. But Abraham also taught judgment. This is knowing what divine law says about sin and its penalty. Abraham's family would be well instructed in the consequence of sin. We should all instruct our families in justice and judgment. What is right, and what are the consequences of doing what is not right? In other words, justice is righteous living. Judgment is sin and its punishment. Abraham taught these facts to his family and to his household. And what were the results of this teaching? And they shall keep the way of the Lord, verse 19. This should be the ultimate desire of all godly people, that their families shall keep the way of the Lord. All other desires of health, wealth, prosperity should be secondary to the great desire that they shall keep the way of the Lord. And the strong implication here is that this is a result of the family being taught the things of God. Verse 19, that the Lord may bring upon Abraham that which was spoken of him. This godly behavior of Abraham's family would allow God's promise to Abraham and his seed to be brought about. And we see that God's plan is revealed to Abraham. Verse 20 says, and the Lord said, because the cry of Sodom and Gomorrah is great, and because their sin is very grievous, I will go down now and see whether they have done altogether according to the cry of it, which is coming to me, and if not, I will know. In Genesis 15:16, we learn that God delayed allowing the Israelites to go to Canaan for 400 years because the iniquity of the Amorites is not yet full. Just as God delayed the judgment of the flood for 120 years, so in the case of the Amorites who inhabited Canaan for 400 years, he waited 400 years before bringing punishment on them by allowing the Israelites to take the land away from them. Yet here in the case of Sodom and Gomorrah, we find a different story. While the Amorites' sin was not yet full, the sin of Sodom and Gomorrah was full. The long-suffering of God had lasted as long as God could see fit. This sin probably included the other three cities of the plain also. Since the long-suffering of God was almost exhausted, the time of their judgment was drawing near. They would be destroyed long before the Amorites. The Amorites were descendants of Canaan, grandsons of Noah. They were located mainly on the west side of the Dead Sea, while Sodom and Gomorrah and the other three cities were on the east side of the Dead Sea. These two cities, one on one side of the sea, one on the other side of the sea, one area was now ripe for judgment. The other area was going to wait 400 years before their sin would be ripe enough for the punishment. The sin of these cities, particularly Sodom and Gomorrah, was especially inexcusable, in that they, more than any of the other cities of the land of Canaan, had seen the power of the Lord. They had been miraculously delivered from a horrible fate at the hands of the kings of the east through Abraham's rescue brought about by God's miraculous power. They had also heard the testimony of Melchizedek when the king of Sodom met with Abraham and Melchizedek after the slaughter of the kings. They also had, more than likely, had the testimony of Lot, although his compromising position may have kept him from being very effective in his testimony. God had given them a special opportunity to know him, and they had rejected him and fallen into even deeper wickedness than before. As Abraham accompanied the three men toward Sodom, he overheard the Lord speaking, and the Lord intended for him to hear these words. The Lord wanted Abraham to know his plans for Sodom and Gomorrah. Abraham was well aware that Lot and his family were there, and Abraham needed to be able to fully instruct his family regarding God's will. They would need to know the reason for the terrible destruction the cities were about to undergo. Although God is a God of mercy and long-suffering, we know that he is also a God of wrath and will not spare when the time of judgment comes. The desolate region of Sodom, which was all that was left after the destruction of these cities, would in the centuries to come be a perpetual warning to Israel and to the rest of the world that God has a day of judgment and will not spare the wicked. God did not actually say in so many words that he intended to destroy Sodom and Gomorrah. He said, because the cry of Sodom and Gomorrah is great and their sin is very grievous, I will go down and see whether they have altogether done according to the cry of it, which is coming to me, and if not, I will know. Verses 20 and 21. In the same way, he earlier had come down to Babel to see the rebellion there. Of course, God knew the full facts without actually going down into the city, and since he is all-knowing, he, in all probability, did this to impress upon men that he actually had seen the full situation before he acted in judgment. These verses have a very vital meaning to us today. So-called Christian nations of our modern times, such as the United States, has had the Christian gospel taught for a long time. But mankind, including our society, has rejected it, and is going down into a state of moral corruption and wickedness, which is worse than the pagan world before Christ. But God has assured mankind, through his word, that they will soon be coming to judgment. This story of Sodom and Gomorrah serves as a grim reminder for this fact. Until judgment comes, and it surely will come, the people of God have the duty of continuing to pray for the lost and to strive to teach them warning of the sure wrath to come. It seems that our society is more and more approving of Sodom's sin rather than being ashamed of it and repenting, and especially as was true of Abraham, it is very necessary that believers command their children to keep the way of the Lord. Verse 22 says, "And the men turned their faces from thence and went toward Sodom, but Abraham stood yet before the Lord." As the Lord was talking with Abraham, the two men walking with them departed and headed toward Sodom. Abraham, however, having sensed what the Lord planned to do to Sodom and Gomorrah, did not turn back to his own home. He felt it necessary to stay in the presence of the Lord and to make an intercession for those who might not have participated in their wickedness. No doubt the condition of Lot and his family was very much on Abraham's mind. In our next lesson, we will see how Abraham made great intercession for the people of Sodom and Gomorrah. Till next time, this is N.C. Crouch saying goodbye, friends.